Welcome back to Honestly May. I'm Crystal.
And I'm Jess. We're here to share our stories open and honestly about how mommin' ain't easy.
Welcome back, everybody. I can't believe we're doing episode 3.
I'm telling you, recording these podcasts just make me realize how fast weeks fly by.
I know, because we do this every week. This week, we're going to get real personal. So me and Jess thought maybe from our first episode, there might be a lot of unanswered questions that you all may have for us that you might want to know. So for this episode, we're going to get a little bit deep. I am going to tell you quite a bit about me and how I grew up in my childhood. And then next episode, Jess is going to get real deep and give us kind of a little rundown of her, just so you guys can really get to know us. And when we do talk about certain things, if we reference to certain things, then you've kind of heard our story. Then you can understand maybe why we have these point of views and maybe why we see things maybe different than you or see things differently than. So yeah, we're going to jump in.
I think us sharing our stories will definitely help our listeners be able to understand better why we parent the way we do and
the way we are.
Yeah, it's just why we are the individuals we are today.
So again, my name is Crystal. I've kind of grown up a little bit everywhere. I'm originally from a very, very small town in Kansas. And that is where I was born in Kansas, but I was also raised in Kansas until I was 12. And then once I was 12, I was put in foster care in Kansas, and then I was transferred to California, which you're going to hear this whole story.
When you were born, how many siblings did you have? Or were you the first child? Or?
I'm the middle child. So I have an older brother and a younger sister.
How long did you live with your mom?
So I actually have never really lived with my mom. The backstory, and I can't say if it's true or not because I don't have a relationship with my mom and we've never talked about it or anything. Backstory of what I was told, my mom left to go party or go live her life and she never came back.
When is the last time you've talked to your mom?
Well, my mom has tried to be a part of my life for years now. She is on my socials and she does send gifts to my kids for holidays and birthdays, but we do not talk.
Do you feel like your mom has turned her life around or is she just trying to like redeem for some of her wrongdoing in the past?
I'm gonna say that. But also, like, we have been in the same room together, and which I'll tell you the story once we go back and we walk through my childhood and as I was an adult. But we've been in the same room together, and she's very cold and makes comments that I just don't think are appropriate. And I just have a lot of trauma, and it took me a long time to get over the fact that what happened to me wasn't my fault. And kind of doing so, I put that blame on her because she put me in that position. Well, she left me in that position.
Becoming a parent and having your own children, did that change your perspective on your childhood?
That's a great question. Yes and no. I obviously parent way different than my biological parents. I also live a very, very different life than how I grew up as a child. I strive to be a better parent. I know I'm a better parent, but also it's because I know I'm a better human being.
So you're born, you already have an older sibling. Where are you living with your mom and your older sibling? Was it with family or?
No. So I don't really know the answers to these questions. I just know that we lived in a house and my biological father wasn't even in the picture when my mom had us as littles.
And then you have a younger sibling, right?
Correct.
How old was your younger sibling when you guys were removed from whatever home you were in with your mom?
So I was 3. My brother and I are like Irish twins. Then my biological sister, my younger sister, she is, I want to say, 3 years younger than me.
So you're 3 years old. You're pulled from your home.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get to stay with your siblings?
No.
Wow. So when you were pulled, did you immediately go to like emergency homes or was it like a shelter?
You know, it's crazy.
That you, I guess, from what you've been told, because I know at three, you don't really recall these memories.
Correct. Well, you know what's funny is I do have a memory being in a really good foster home. It was probably the best foster home I was ever in. I was with this family when I was younger at three. I was put with them and I just remember they had an older son. He was in college at the time. And I just remember like having Easter with them, playing games, riding my bike. Like I remember a really positive time in my life when I was that young with this family.
I've always wanted to be a foster home, at least an emergency foster home. And this conversation is just making me want to do that so much more because I just can't imagine. When I lived in a shelter when I was younger, I was still with my mom. So it was completely different. But I can't imagine having to go live in a foster home, even if the first family was a good experience. So how long did you live with the first family before you were moved? And did you ever get back to being with your other siblings?
So I can't tell you that. I don't remember. Okay. But I do remember it wasn't long because I was then placed with my biological father around the age of four.
When you were placed back with your father around the age of four, was he in the same town or did he live in a different location?
From when
where your mom lived. Like, did they have any sort of relationship?
No. So he lived in a different town. I grew up in a town called Council Grove, Kansas, when I was placed with my father.
What did your father do for a living?
You know, honestly, I'm not quite sure, but I know it was a factory and they made stuff because if there was ever a tornado, he would pack us up in the car and take us there.
Was he like financially responsible?
Yes.
And what was his childhood like? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know.
Because I always wondered like how the generational curse or traumas, you know, continue to impact us as we grow.
Well, I do know, I had heard that his biological dad, so my grandpa, did what he did to me to his sister.
Correct. So these are things that were definitely like learned behaviors. In a way.
Correct.
When did the abuse start? Was it right away? Was it only because of alcohol or drugs? Or was it just something that was like a constant?
No, actually, believe it or not, alcohol wasn't really a play in my biological father. He wasn't really a drinker.
From your point of view, did he live a pretty normal life? Like, was life from your eyes not knowing what is normal and what is not? Did it seem okay? Or was it very chaotic?
No, it seemed okay. We also grew up very, very poor. We were very poor. That is why I do not like hot dogs because I grew up on hot dogs and what are they called? The little fish? Sardines?
I have no idea.
I don't know. Like? It's some type of food. But that's why I actually don't like hot dogs because I ate those so much as a kid and beans. Beans was a big thing too. For me as a kid, that's all I knew. It seemed normal, I guess. We didn't have TV. We didn't have a fancy house. We did live in a house. We lived in a house that was by a car wash, and it was a very old house. I will say my best friends were cockroaches, and I used to talk to them. And
so it was a house, but a very dirty, unkept, unmaintained home.
Correct. Very okay. old. So
did anybody else live there?
Yeah, my brother and sister.
Your brother, your sister, your biological father.
And that's it.
And you. And did he ever have girlfriends?
Or? He did have girlfriends, actually. He actually, I will never forget, he dated this one girl or woman named Amy. And they actually had a baby. So I have a stepsister out there that I've never met because when she was born, my father.
You have memories of her. You do know she's there.
I know she's there.
Somewhere.
But I've just, I can't say like I know her or have met her in a time in my life where I could remember her.
Have you ever done 23andMe?
Yes. So I have done that. And it's so crazy because I've actually had relatives reach out to me saying like I'm a third cousin, I'm a fourth cousin, or like I'm related to you on your dad's side, da 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 da. And some people have like, oh, do you know much about your dad's side? And I straight up email back saying my biological father is a piece of shit and he's a horrible human being and I have nothing to do with him or anything associated with him. And some of them have wrote back and they're like, yeah, we've heard about this on his side of the family. So they've been respected.
They have heard it though from his point of view.
Correct.
Or people in his corner. Now,
No. Not in his corner. Like they have heard it. Like if they're a third cousin, they're like, oh, I've heard that side of the family's fucked up.
Oh, got it.
Yeah, like nobody supported him.
Now that kind of led me into my next question anyways, that when you, from the age of 4 to 12, did anybody else know that there was abuse happening?
No.
Like school didn't catch on? There weren't any signs?
You know, no.
I don't know if it makes it worse.
I was the dirty kid too in school too. We didn't have really running water. So I'm surprised that nobody ever complained about my hygiene because I had horrible hygiene as a kid.
My gosh, that breaks my heart. This is why, like, I always strive to Kinsley that no matter what, you are, like, loving and accepting of everyone. Like, you don't have to be everybody's friend.
But you never know the story.
But you have to be kind because, like, for instance, that boy who choked her the other day, I'm like, God, what is happening at home in his home? I'm sorry, but your average child doesn't think to do those things if they're not exposed to it, in my opinion. But going back from 4 to 12, what things would bring on this abuse? Was it just like the way he would punish, or was this just what kind of abuse did you endure?
So I endured it all. I have one memory. My dad used a belt, and it wasn't just any belt. It had like these rhinestone metal things on it. And he would beat the crap out of us with it. I think too, this is why I'm so conscious sleeping as an adult. When I hear a sound, I wake up because he would sometimes come in when we were asleep as kids and just start beating on us.
So and you have PTSD.
But you know what? This is so sad to say. I actually preferred it when he would beat us when I was asleep because I was so asleep that I always felt like it didn't hurt as much.
It was easier for you to dissociate.
Correct.
From what it sounds like. Now, are it's you weird hyper to say that, vigilant to people's footsteps?
I am.
In the switch so, in their moods?
You know, we talk about our anxiety, how it's like stepped up. My anxiety has gotten really bad over the years since I've had kids in my home. Like, meaning, what I mean, not in my home because of anyone. What I mean is I am like constantly afraid that somebody's going to break into my home and hurt my children.
You have a lot of paranoia.
I do.
And I have that exact same paranoia. It's why my house is like totally rigged with Ring cameras and I have two giant German shepherds. Like nobody is coming in and out of my house without consequences, so to speak. It's also why I have my concealed carry.
Yes, exactly.
I will go to any means to protect my family. Have you ever, I know you said that you have gone to therapy and you've worked through these things. That's why you're able to talk about them. Were you ever diagnosed with like CPTSD or just PTSD or anything?
No.
You were just, told you had like SAD, right? Which is seasonal depression.
Correct. Yes. And that was recently. That was like 2 years ago when I was super depressed over the fall, the winter. So I'm going to be honest with you. I did therapy as a kid, but I absolutely hated it. I hated going to therapy because the therapist would be like, tell me why you're here. And in my head, you know why the fuck I'm here. Mm-hmm. Why do I have to sit here and tell you? And I get maybe you want to hear from my point of view. I've done therapy as an adult, but nothing that had to do with my childhood traumas.
Got it.
I guess maybe I'm being naive. I don't feel like I need it in the sense because I have mentally worked through all my childhood traumas on my own.
And you've let yourself process it.
I have. I don't blame myself anymore. I don't put that shame on me. And I don't allow that to affect my life today, because I've always said that is not who I'm going to be. That is not who I stand for. And that is also not what's going to come into my household.
And that's incredible, because not a lot of people can sit there and say the exact same thing. I know just for myself, I started my therapy journey 8 weeks ago. So 2 months ago, I'm only on my 8th session. And I'm astonished by how much my childhood has affected my entire life, because I've perfected suppression, like hiding all of, like just putting it down, like bottling up, like that never happened, or it did happen. Oh, well, gotta move on. So I'm very proud of you for being able to be such a good mom and friend and wife, while even though you work through it, like you still carry that baggage. Like it's still.
I do. And I will say, like how I always said, my friends are my therapist. I am not afraid to talk about my past. I am not afraid to talk about what I went through. I am not afraid to put that out there. I have worked through it enough to where I can have a conversation and answer questions. It's not going to trigger me, because I also feel like there is so much of that, believe it or not, out there in the world, that people sometimes feel they're alone and they're the only ones, and they're not.
My biggest thing is for myself, I never wanted to be looked at as weak or like not enough. Like I might feel that way internally, but my entire life I've always made sure to like mask all my feelings and on the outside make it seem like I'm not insecure. I don't have low self-esteem. But when you talk about your friends being like your therapists and people you can open up to, I always say that like God puts certain people in your life for certain reasons, and you cross paths with people. When our friendship began, I was actually in a really dark spot. I had just gone through a lot of things, and it just like brought it all back up. And being able to be your friend and have someone to talk to and, you know, open up to, work through things, who could relate to me, was huge, because not very many people can relate to certain things that are so traumatic. Like,
yeah, that's why I feel like sometimes, you know, your friends are your therapy and your friends are the ones that you can confide in. And so that's how I've always looked at my friendships. A lot of my friends who are really close to me know about my traumas and know, you know, where I come from. You know, I've had friends. I have friends too. They've literally told me their first impression of me is some spoiled woman or girl.
Bougie.
Some bougie spoiled person, mm-hmm, that comes from a good family, even maybe a family with money, all that. And I'm like, no. I think they get that because I do hold my head up really high, but I also feel like I'm entitled to do that because I've had to fight and work really hard to be here today, not only alive, but also be where I'm at.
That's because people judge people based on their, like, judge a book by its cover. Like, people are so quick to judge and assume. I don't think there's anything we can do to really change that.
No. People are always going to judge. Trust me.
When you were talking about friends being your therapist and how I said that, you know, God puts certain people in your life for certain reasons. On our mom's trip, I actually started talking to some of the moms that I met on that trip because I met you. And one of the moms said, "Do you think that these events hurt your self-esteem or affect your self-esteem?" And she made me realize something that I've never realized, because one of them was talking about domestic violence, which led me into sharing my story with her, because I told her, hey, if you're going through this, get your kid out now. Like, if you're not strong enough to do it for you, do it for your kid. So it's crazy how certain people come into your life for certain reasons. Now, when you were a child and the abuse would happen afterwards, did he apologize?
No.
So he never explained. He would come in, abuse you guys for no reason, eventually stop, thank
God. Well, he always has reasons. He said he would say it's because we acted up. I protected, especially my little sister, a lot, because I never wanted anything to happen to my little sister. When things would happen, I guess I'd put myself out there, kind of like.
You took one for the team.
Yes, correct. He would threaten me and say, like, you know, if you guys want to eat, this is what you're going to do. Like, he would hold certain things that we needed against me in order to get what he wanted.
And when you, like, what he wanted, was that just, like, I need you to clean up your toys? Or was this, like, a whole nother avenue of abuse?
Whole nother avenue of abuse.
Wow. I feel bad, like, talking about this because it is such a difficult subject.
Well, don't feel bad. This is my life, and this is what it is, but... don't feel bad. Get out there. Nobody should be feeling bad for me. Don't feel sorry for me. I will tell you, sometimes when my friends are like, I feel so sorry for you, that actually irritates me. I don't want anyone to feel sorry for me, because I have overcome it and I've fought through it. And I feel like that, my past as a kid, when this grown man is doing something where I couldn't control it, does not define me as a person today.
No, it does not. And I'm so grateful that you are willing to share your story and your experiences with the world, because there are a lot of people that are naive. That never happens. That'll never happen to my child. And they put their kids unwillingly or unknowingly in situations for abuse like this to happen.
Well, so, I mean, we've talked about this. I'm not a sleepover parent unless I'm, like, best friends with the parent. Like, I know both parents inside out.
I won't do summer camps because I'm so terrified of my children being taken advantage of. Like,
my kids can have sleepovers coming here and all that. And once they're old enough, now I will say, when they're old enough, like 16, 17, 18, where they can fight for themselves, they can call 911, they can do this, or they know not to put themselves in this situation.
Like, they have a safe spot.
They have a safe spot, yes. Someone. They can totally go and obviously have a sleepover, do their thing. But young age and all that, we don't do sleepovers. If they want a sleepover, then come here. Now, my daughter obviously has had sleepovers. She's had a sleepover at your house. But I know you and I know your husband. My husband knows you and your husband. We have to really know you and connect with you for me to really feel comfortable having my children spend the night at your house.
Well, and it also helps that I have a daycare in my home because I have cameras everywhere. And just that extra peace of mind, I'm sure, helps with your confidence in leaving them with me, which I really appreciate that, because that's huge to trust people with your children just in general.
I will say, though, like, my abuse and all of that didn't just stop when I got taken from my dad. So I actually got put in foster care when I was 12. And then you kind of asked, you know, you asked me the other day, how did that all come about? Like, how did they know to come take you? Well, it happened when I was at school. I got caught. I think I was cheating on a test. I was asked to stay after school. And when the teacher, it was a male teacher, had me stay after school, I had like a freak out moment. And I was also really scared for them. I was begging not to tell my father. And then I like said, this is what's going to happen. And because I was like diarrhea of the mouth, it all came to light real quick.
But after 8 years of enduring all of this abuse, you saved not only yourself, but your siblings.
Well, so I'd like to say yes. But when I got taken, actually, I was the only one that was taken away. They did an investigation. So my brother and sister had to stay.
Stop. They took you away from your little sister?
From my brother and my sister, yeah. My brother and sister had to stay with my dad.
Oh my God. So your middle child gets taken away from her older sibling and her younger sibling. Your younger sibling is your brother. Your older sister...
No. My older sibling is my brother.
And your younger sister
is my sister.
I've always had it flipped. As someone who grew up feeling like they raised their younger sister and was always responsible for her...
Oh my gosh.
I cannot even imagine.
Oh, I had many sleepless nights because I was terrified of what was going to happen to her, because I've protected her all that time. My brother and sister were only with him though for 3 weeks. Then they finally came in and took both of them. They did the investigation. Everything came out. The light came out. I went through the whole process of, you know, the doctor visits and the therapy and like the interviews, and it all came to light.
I don't know if anyone needs to hear this, but if your child ever comes to you and is uncomfortable after a situation or is telling you that something happened, take it seriously. Like, I feel like there are so many times that kids drop hints and people don't take them seriously. And that allows it to happen for 8 years. Like, this is something that should have ended way sooner.
Correct. 100%. 100%. But also, I grew up in a very small country town, like very, very. So, like, do you get the notes sent home that you have to sign to give permission when they do the talks at school.
Yeah.
So we get those, like no touch, bad touch, all that. And I like obviously want my kids to be able to identify it too outside my home.
Have you talked to your kids about like their personal space bubble?
Oh, yes, 100%. When I was growing up, we didn't have these conversations in school. We didn't have any of this. It wasn't a thing.
I don't remember any talks in school about sex at all until like Robert Crown. And I think that was high school. And that was just like the menstrual cycle. That wasn't.
Yeah. I know, exactly. Anything. We didn't have all this when I grew up in it as a kid. So I kind of appreciate they do have this because, you know, kids, they're so young and vulnerable. They don't really know either.
Well, you had said before that you never spoke up because you also didn't know that it wasn't normal. Like the physical abuse obviously is a little bit more obvious that like isn't right because, you know, you're hurting. That's like physical harm. But when it came to the other abuse, like how is you as a child... Were you supposed to know that that wasn't an expression of love or like just another, you can't know what you don't know.
I know. So I was taken away from my dad. I was put in another foster home. The foster home I was put in was actually pretty good. It was a single, I kind of remember most of my foster homes. I was put in woman's home. She wasn't married or anything. And that one was good. But then they took me because I was with her by myself. So then once my brother and sister got pulled, they took me and connected me with my sister and put us in another foster home. And that foster home was not good. The foster father was just, he wasn't physically abusive. He didn't beat us with a belt and like a spoon or anything like that. But I will say he was touchy-feely.
He was sexually inappropriate with
you guys. Correct. So he was touchy-feely. So I had that happen. And so,
now you're in your preteen years.
Correct. So that was kind of one thing. So
how long were you with that foster home?
I was 12 and I got shipped to California right before my 14th birthday. So a little over a year. We were with them. And then a little bit after my 13th birthday and all that, we got sent to California. We got sent to California to live with my mom, my brother, sister, and I.
Was this because your mom was like, did your dad and mom like fight for you guys? No. Custody, or was this just how the system ended
up? My dad lost all his parental rights, actually. So he was out of the picture. I think he even signed his rights away. Like he was out. But my mom apparently came about and she lived in the state of California.
How was there never an investigation on the sexual abuse? Like, girl, how did the system fail you and your siblings? There's no explanation.
There is no explanation because the system is somewhat flawed. Until this day, I think it's gotten better, but back then it wasn't the greatest.
It's one of those topics that I strongly believe that people don't want to talk about. They don't want to believe it because it's so difficult to accept that this happens. Like, it's just like, I don't know why, but it reminds me of like sex trafficking. Like, we know happens behind closed doors, but people deny it because it's, what is that movie? It's about the little girl and boy that were abducted from Brazil or something.
Yeah.
And put into it. Like, that's based on true events. Like, this stuff happens. We have to start watching out for not only our own kids, but all kids out there.
Correct. We were taken to California, but then we were not placed with our mother.
So you went dad, foster home in California.
Yep.
Did you have visits with your mom?
We knew her and of her and stuff, but no.
Did she have any other children besides the one girl baby that you... Okay.
Nope, just us.
So what... As far as I know. What was her reasoning for not being able to... not only take you guys in and be a mom and raise you, but she wasn't even a part of your life.
I don't know. It's a question for her.
I mean,
I've never asked her.
These are things that I would have to know. Like, I want to know, why did you make the choices you made?
Like, correct.
I don't know.
Well, because you decided to go party one day and live your young life, you also put me in a position with a monster. And that's how I look at
it. Now, was she raped by your biological father? Or was she in a relationship with him?
I don't know.
Like, I want to know.
These are questions I don't know.
Did you know what he was going to do to me and my siblings? And that's why you, like, put a mind block in and ran away? Because you knew what was happening because of your poor choices?
I don't know.
Like, these are things I would want to know. I still want to know. Like, I still wanted to do, like, PI work to find out where your biological father is as far as his journey. Because that's what you had said was that he was dead. And, like,
I think he got some type of cancer. Because my biological brother, he actually did so much research because he wanted to find out. And I think last time he heard that he got cancer or something and, like, passed away or was not doing well and was about to pass away.
How can someone be so broken and so mentally ill to abuse their own children?
But just think, there's so many sickos. Look at all the Netflix documentaries that are coming out about psychopaths and stuff. Like
the whole, like, it's just Epstein thing.
People are fucked up.
Yeah.
And so we just have to be aware of our surroundings and the people we let in our life.
Yeah. And if you've experienced any trauma like this in your life, like, get help. It's okay to get help. It's okay to use the resources that are out there to help you navigate these things. And
so, I lived in California, was put back in foster care, and then I was moved from 2 or 3 different foster homes. I actually, believe it or not, California, when we first got there, they didn't have anywhere for me and my sister to go. You will never guess where they put us.
Was it a shelter?
No. They put us in an all-boys group home.
What?
Yeah. It was an all-boys group home. There was one room open. They didn't have anywhere for us to go. It was the closest place they could find to put us. They put us there.
And an all-boys like group. Boarding school, kind of, in a way. Like a home for boys?
Yeah, but troubled boys. It's a group home for boys that were like, we spent like 2 or 3 days there. I will never forget that. And then
you were 13, 14 years old.
With all these boys. Yes.
Now, were you, I don't know how to ask this, but because you were sexually abused, was that something that, like, you felt like was a form of love, or was it taboo or, like, bad to you?
Okay. So,
like, did you use that, like, in that? Like, in the boys' home, was that, like, something that was just, like...
No, nothing in the boys' home ever happened or anything. I was very kind of, like, to myself. Me and my sister were kept, obviously, away from them. We were very well, like, I guess...
Protected
in a way, because we were kept in our own quarters. No, I wouldn't say... I mean, I would say I am a love chaser. I, like, ride or die for the men I've always dated. Or loved.
Because you weren't loved correctly as a child.
Correct. So, and you know, what's the joke or like the horrible saying people always like, you got daddy issues?
Just daddy issues?
Yes. So I would say, like, I don't have daddy issues. Because anymore. If I had daddy,
anymore.
No. But, because I always say, like, you know, they say if you have daddy issues, you marry somebody or, like, were with somebody twice your age who resembles your father.
Yeah. I'm daddy issues could be just, like, you being promiscuous or you going relationship to relationship or you... It's basically having bad traits or doing things just out of spite of dad. Like,
yeah.
Because I've got daddy issues. Like,
I don't know. I never really got the term, but that's, you know, what you see in movies or hear.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. Fell and loved hard when I met a boy. You know, I remember all my boyfriends in high school.
How old were you when you, obviously, love has a different meaning and takes on different explanations at different times of our lives and blah, blah, blah. But how old were you when you think you fell in love for the first time?
So I can honestly say my first big love was someone, was a guy I met my senior year of high school. And then when I actually graduated high school, I moved in with him and I was with him for like 4 years. We were even off and on, but I was with him for quite a while. That makes sense.
Yeah. You thought that that was kind of like the one.
Mm-hmm.
What ended that relationship?
Well, so I knew he was going to propose to me at one point in my life. I had just gotten back. This was years later. So we were together. Then I went and lived my life. You know, I went and lived in Europe. I worked at a kid's camp. I traveled around. I went and did all that. I lived in New York City. So after New York City, I went back to California.
You were single, essentially.
Correct.
Like,
yeah.
Kind of dated, yep, around.
Nope. I was single. So I moved back to California and I moved in with one of my best friends. Him and I reconnected. He was also at a point in his life, his career was going, that he was really looking for the one.
Do you feel like your relationship with him, even though you were young, was healthy?
Yes.
Okay.
I actually do. I do think so. I do, 100%. We reconnected, but then, like, I always, you know me, I am like such a go-getter. I really wanted more in my life. I wanted more to my life, I should say. I've always, like, because of everything I went through, I just have always had this idea in my head of how I wanted my life to be great and grand and fabulous. And I'm not going to say my life obviously now is not great and grand and fabulous, but it is fabulous in the way that I absolutely love and adore my life.
You took your bad and negative situations and trauma and turned it into motivation to
want more. So when I knew he was going to pretty much propose to me or ask, I ran away.
You saw your future and you're like, this is not it.
Yes. I ran away. I went and became a flight attendant, and which everybody who knows me since I was a kid always knew I wanted to be a flight attendant because I wanted to travel the world. It was like my biggest dream. And yes, some people are like, being a flight attendant is not like a glorious job. It was more about traveling the world. I wanted to experience life and see the world and what it had to offer, because I grew up in such a tight, close quartered, like, of bubble that of what,
where your friends were cockroaches. I mean,
correct. That I knew of, and like this abuse and everything was just this bubble and this bubble and this bubble. And I knew that that bubble, it wasn't the only bubble out there. So I always wanted to travel the world and see the world and all of that. So I became a flight attendant. I did travel. I dated too. I dated pilots even. Like, I did it all.
Now I have to ask, do you feel like the rumors of pilots and being unfaithful is...
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, okay.
I would never marry a pilot. Yeah. I would never, like, I dated two pilots all the same. Oh. Nope. Sorry. Now there are some, like, I have friends whose husbands are pilots.
And they are faithful.
And they are faithful. But I think it takes a special, like, man. It's like my husband. My husband travels for work. And I could be that paranoid wife that's like, oh my God, my husband could cheat on me on the road, because there are a lot of husbands who do that. But my husband, the type of man and person he is nowhere near close to that type of personality. Like, he would never, ever jeopardize the family we've grown and the life we have together for a 2-second booty call.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I definitely think that people that make those choices are projecting their own issues into that. Like, instead of actually facing the reasons of why they want to cheat, they're just cheating because it's easier.
Correct. It's always easier. It's easier than facing it. I mean, me and my husband, I would say our biggest issue in our marriage is communication, but it kind of stems from, like, where, and I'm not saying, like, communication where we don't communicate, like, on a regular basis. I'm talking communication, like, when I feel a certain way about something, I don't really tell him or talk to him. I kind of just work through it and let it go. My husband does the same thing. So we both don't really... Here's an example. So, like, when Seth is pissing you off, you tell Seth, piss me off, don't do that.
I straight up say...
Correct.
What? Yeah.
Me and my husband, we don't do that.
Me and my ex-husband did not do that either.
He is pissing me off. He can tell he's pissing me off, but I don't straight up call him out and be like, you're fucking pissing me off. Stop.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, okay. And then I let it go. And it's kind of same thing, vice versa. Now, this does not work in every relationship, but this actually has worked for our relationship. We don't really fight, I guess, because of that. Like, we haven't had big fights. We haven't had blow-ups. There's no, like, FUs or, like, you're being a dick or you're being a bitch. Like, there's nothing like that. So I think that balance for us works.
Yeah. And I think it'll continue to work. I mean, if it's worked this long, as long as you guys are willing to like communicate more when it's needed.
Correct.
Because I feel like one of the like ruts that we get into, like I'll bring up sex, okay? Because we talked about sex on the last episode, so we'll just talk about it, right? Some wives, I'm not speaking behalf of me or you, I'm just saying some wives feel like just because they are having sex with their husband's needs are met, where that's not entirely true. But they don't know that. And if their husband's not expressing that, that's why you have pilots that cheat. Because their wife at home is thinking everything's fine. They're acting like everything's fine. But instead of saying, hey, I'm not satisfied, they're going and cheating because it's easier. They're avoiding conflict. So having that communication and as the years go on, building it to be stronger and more vulnerable and open and honest will just continue to build that strong,
correct,
relationship off of the foundation you guys already have.
Me and my husband have the best relationship. And what I love most about him is he has never told me no on the sense of when I've wanted to do something. So, you know, we just talked about how I've always wanted to travel the world. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to see the world. I want to do that. I want my children to do that. I want my children to experience life, enjoy what life has to offer. When I want to go on vacation, obviously I'm not just like, we're going on vacation every 2 weeks and I'm throwing out cash here. I am very responsible. But when I want to go somewhere, my husband's like, all right, let's do it. Or if I want to travel somewhere, like I'm taking the kids to Pigeon Forge for fall break, my husband's like, yeah, go for it. As long as, you know, the kids are taken care of and you guys are safe. Yeah, why not?
He's very supportive.
He's very supportive. Very. And the same, and I think it's tit for tat because my husband has a very demanding job and we've had to relocate. We've lived in 7 different homes because of his job and relocation that I have always been like, all right, we're moving. I've never said no, let's do it. Which we're going to actually have a guest on our episode and we're going to talk about relocation because she's a transplant as well. And we're going to talk about, you know, the struggles and what comes along with relocation. So that's
from someone who might not be so resilient to moving because they didn't grow up the same way as you. Like you moved so much as a child.
Yes.
You kind of know how to like go with the flow in a way.
Correct. Yeah. I've always been receptive for when my husband's like, all right, I'm being relocated. I'm being offered an opportunity. And I'm like, take it, take it. I've always been very, very receptive to his job and him growing and his success. And that's same thing for him being with me when I want to travel or if I have an idea or if I want to add something to the house. He's like, all right, what do we need to do?
Now, how do you feel like your dysfunction in your childhood has made you who you are as a parent today? Like, it's very obvious that trauma that you endured, you didn't bring that baggage and that hurt and everything that comes along with that into your marriage. You have such a healthy marriage for someone who has been through so much. How do you feel like your childhood has affected who you are as a parent or how you parent?
Well, I'm very alert when it comes to my children. I love up on my children. I make sure every day before my kids go to school, when I pick them up, before they go to bed, everything that they know, I love them. My daughter will tell you, she has literally told me, Mom, you tell me you love me all the time. I just always want my kids to know that I love them.
So you are all for, like, you're all for affection, like showing affection to your children in the right way.
Correct. I didn't have a good childhood on the aspect. I never did anything. I never went on vacation or trips as a child.
We went to the Holiday Inn that was in the same town that we lived in.
But didn't you go to Disney?
My grandma did take me to Disney.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I never did any of that, nothing like that when I was a kid at all. Not even a teenager. When our foster parents would travel, they didn't take us. We would be put in temporary foster care at a different home while they went on vacation. I didn't get that. So with my kids, I want my kids to do everything. So I take my kids on vacation. I take my kids out to eat. I do not spoil my children because I want them to learn, you know, the value of a dollar. And like, you can't just ask for something and you're going to get it. But I have taken how I grew up as a child and flip-flopped it. And I want my children to know that they have a very safe, they have a loving home, they have a supportive mom and dad. Like,
instead of repeating the pattern, you're doing the complete opposite.
Correct.
To make sure that they're set up for a better future. My only thing as doing that, because I know that I do that with my kids. I put, you know, my inner child is definitely, you know, being satisfied by giving them everything I never had, giving them the opportunities I never had. It's a very hard line of not setting very high expectations for them, because I want them to always be grateful for the opportunities they have and the things they are able to do. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, I don't know.
It is a very fine line. It is. Because you want to be able to give your child the world, but on the same sense, you want them to understand, like, you're not going to get everything you ask for. Life is not going to give you everything that you think it should give you. You do have to work for it. I've had to work really hard. You know, I went to college. I've had to work jobs.
You got a degree in marketing?
Yes.
Right, yeah.
I've worked 3 jobs at one point in my life. I've done it all.
Did you ever have to work when you were a child or like in high school or anything?
Yes, yeah. I did. My first job was when I was 14. I was a dishwasher for a restaurant.
My first job was when I was 10. I was a busser of tables and everyone thought I was older. That's why I got to work at 10. But man, like, could you imagine our girls working in the next few years?
Oh,
busing
I know.
Tables.
So me and Adam,
I couldn't even fathom.
We have a rule. If our kids are not doing sports, they will have a job. If they are doing sports, they will not have to have a job. Now, Mackenzie could do babysitting on the side or like something small like that.
I mean, I was 14 working like 5 nights a week to be able to pay for my own cell phone and stuff. Is that kind of how you were too?
No, I wasn't allowed any of that. The one reason I got emancipated from foster care is because they wouldn't let me have a cell phone. They tried to say I had an eating disorder because I was hiding food in my duffel bag, but I was hiding food because they wouldn't let me eat when I get home from sports, and I was actually good at sports, so I was on varsity, which means I practiced and had late games. And then they would be dicks to me about eating, so I hid food because I was fucking hungry.
Oh my God, I had a babysitter, which is, I think, another reason why I'm so protective of my own children. And I have never let them go to daycare. And I started my own so that I could protect not only mine, but other people's children. I had a babysitter who would not let me drink a sip of water until I finished all of my food. So not only would I not eat, because how do you eat without having something to drink? I would cry and get in trouble and be, I would get picked up and they would tell my mom how terrible I was because they were not giving me water.
That's horrible.
My kids always have a water cup. Like, it's water. But back then, like, you don't know. Don't know.
I know.
Like, I'm very grateful the person you are today is someone that, like, I look up to and I want my daughter to look up to. And I'm very grateful that you have gone through all of these things and are a coach on top of everything else.
I mean, you know, how I am with my friendships. I'm very particular about my friendships, but I also hold my friendships very close to me just because I cherish the people who come in my life and I cherish my friendships, which we're going to talk about, because being a mom and having mom
friends
is fucking hard, man. I mean, I feel like I'm constantly being put in mom drama too, where I'm like, wait, what? I have nothing to do with this. But, like, let me get my popcorn and let me listen because it's so interesting.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I feel like because I've been through so much, but I've always been told, like, oh, you've got an old soul. You're so mature for your age, because I've had to grow up so fast.
I've been told that too.
But because of, like, all of that and then getting divorced so early, I feel like a lot of other moms around my age are going through situations that I've gone through years ago. So it's hard for me to relate to, like, mom friends sometimes. It's hard to build friendships with people who haven't, like, grown up yet, in a way.
Yeah, that makes sense. That totally makes sense. I guess mine is just, like, we move so much. We're not obviously moving again, but, like, I'm always having to put myself out there, because we would never have friends anywhere we lived if it wasn't for me, like, putting myself out there to be like, hi, I'm Crystal. I'm a mom. How are you?
Oh, yeah. If you wouldn't have pursued our friendship, we would have talked that day at the high school, and then that would have been it. And I would have stayed in my own little bubble because I have such a tough brick wall built up that I don't personally like to let anybody in because it's a defense mechanism, I guess. My longest friend, because of moving, I've known her since I was in sixth grade, but that's it, just one. You said you have one friend that you are still close to from childhood,
Jenna,
right?
Yep. Jenna. She is like my sister. We are not blood related. We are not anything, but to me, like, she is the closest thing to a sister I have. You know, it's crazy. We come from two different families, but we've actually have a lot in common. Like after her first child, just like, you know, after mine, she had multiple miscarriages. I had multiple miscarriages.
When you talked about how you were familiar with a Mormon lifestyle.
She was the one that lived the Mormon lifestyle. When she's now divorced and living like the cool mom life.
Oh my gosh, when we were on mom's trip, I just adored her. So I talked to her a lot. And she talked about all about being married into the Mormon culture. And
although I used to call her, I used to say, you're like a dirty martini because... Deep down, she drank coffee or caffeine, I guess you'd say. She would wear a two-piece swimsuit when she was with me on vacay. She would have a drink with me. She didn't do the norm, but she did the norm to appease her marriage at the time.
Yeah, she would be a great one to have like on a phone call podcast, yeah. I think, to dig deeper into that. Because, man, she had some good stories.
I know. And now she, you know, she's divorced now. She is dating a great guy. And she's kind of blended her family with him because he has kids, too, from his previous marriage. But she's just living her life. And he's so good for her. Like, she is so, she's fun, Jenna, again. Like, she's so fun. But yeah, so she is the closest thing to me. So she knows everything. We talk like once a week, probably. We don't see each other as often as we should because, you know, life gets in the way, but take my friendships and keep them very close. Cause you know how you're always like, you know, so many people. Yeah. I've moved around a lot. So that helps. I've met tons of moms from moving around with my husband for his job. And so I do kind of know moms from all over, but I've just connected with a good group of moms everywhere I've lived. And I've kept those close, tight knit friendships.
So now that we're kind of getting to the end of our time here and we cross lots of bridges on difficult subjects, how did your husband feel after listening to last week's episode?
He actually liked it. I was a little shocked. I thought maybe he's like, oh, yep, sex life's out there. You really are telling people. And I was like, babe, but come on. In reality, do you really understand that most women who are listening to this, who are moms, are going to be like, yeah, I can relate? And he's like, yes, that's why I'm okay with it, because I can agree with you on the part that life just gets crazy. And sometimes we just kind of forget about the intimacy part. So yeah, he was cool with it.
I feel like this episode takes us back to like remembering that there's so much more to a relationship than just sex.
Correct.
Like it you is. Can have a very healthy marriage and only have sex when it's convenient
for you. Yes.
And, you know, for your relationship. So I'm glad that he wasn't like, oh my God, Crystal, why are you telling people about this?
I mean, your husband texted him and was like, well, it's all out there. Buckle up. And Adam just started laughing. So your husband was like, oh, it's coming. Yeah, our husbands listen to all our episodes. Anytime we put an episode out, they listen, which I appreciate because they might also learn something new about us. Even though they pretty much know everything about us, they might learn from a perspective of us talking to each other that they didn't see or hear or understand something. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I definitely had to like reiterate to Seth that like I'm being open, honest, vulnerable, because I want other moms to be able to relate to me. And if I try to sugarcoat anything, then they're not going to be able to relate.
So last week we asked moms, if you won the lottery, what would you do? And you see, we had a comment where the mom was like, I would buy a little house or a shed and I would put all the things in there and all the snacks and I would hide it in there away from my children and eat my snacks in peace and quiet.
Yep, she'd have a sheath shed in the backyard.
And I'm like, yes, we all talk about it. When I want a piece of candy, I literally grab it and then I go to the I'm going to the restroom and eat it because I don't want my children to see that I'm eating candy.
Oh my gosh, I just let my kids take, Seth gets so irritated sometimes because he'll like get me something special
because whenever he stops at like the gas station or he's on his way home from work, he typically always brings me like a drink or a snack or something. If my kids see it or if they whatever before I do, I always just give it to them. And he's like, why do you do that? Like, that was for you. Like, I did so. They get stuff all the time. You yeah. spoil them. But that's what makes me think of it. Like the TikToks of moms like hiding in the closet.
Well, I believe she also has twins plus another child. So I do not blame you. If I had twins, I would be hiding underneath my bed being like, let me eat in peace and quiet.
Oh, yeah. Without someone climbing on you. Yep.
Yep. Yeah. So this week's question is, if you could take a dream vacation by yourself as a mom, if you could go anywhere in the world by yourself, where would you go and what would you do?
That's a really hard one. Because I don't like to go anywhere by myself. Like, I don't even like going to the grocery store by myself. Like, I don't know. I'm going to have to really think about that.
Hotel room. That even would be a great vacation. Let me just go spend the night in the hotel room, in the sheets, order room service, and have
You talked about, like, chasing love. I don't think I've ever been alone. And then I started dating Seth, and we, in the first 5 years of our marriage, never spent more than, I don't think we spent a single night away from each other.
I mean, you just went on the mom's trip for the first time, and now you're like, oh my gosh, I totally see why you
take a mom's trip. Every year I'm going on mom's trip. It's a non-negotiable.
Yes, we do a mom's trip every year, and I'm like, now do you see why I go? It's once a year. You need the time to yourself.
Yeah, when we started the freight company, and he was on the road 5 days a week, 7 days a week gone. It really changed our relationship in a great way because we learned how to
miss each other,
be independent.
Yep. And miss each other. You have to miss each other. Like, I love when my husband goes on his work trips, A, because I don't have to feel as bad doing stuff around the house, but more because I'm like, oh, I get to miss you. Mm-hmm. And we get to have a conversation on the phone like we used to when we dated.
Right. Like, it's, absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yes. All right, I think that's it for this episode. Again, I want everybody to think, as a mom, if you could go anywhere on vacation by yourself, where would you go and what would you do? And again, it could be to the hotel down the street just to have a night of sleep to yourself. We would love to hear from you.
Thanks again for listening to Honestly May, where we're here to remind you that honestly, mommin' ain't easy.